Two Bars World Fuck Up with Joe Forrester and Hannah East.
Hello, I'm Joe Forrester and welcome to FUBAR's World Fuck Up. And aye, the World Cup has definitely begun. As England clean up more effectively than Japanese fans, FIFA threaten yellow cards to any national team captain wearing an armband promoting understanding and inclusivity, Argentina's defeat to Saudi Arabia is only the second most baffling thing to happen at this World Cup after Gianni Infantino's press conference, fans who have rainbow bucket hats on have them forcibly confiscated. Fans who have rainbow bucket hats on have them forcibly confiscated. It's always better the second time. Oh, and a couple of scousers on the hunt for beer made friends with the local prince and ended up playing with his pet lion. We're not actually joking. Right, coming up on today's show, we'll talk the tournament so far with comedian Dame Baptiste before we head over to Argentina to discuss their shock defeat against Saudi Arabia. After England chose to abandon their One Love armband following threats of sanctions, we'll be discussing the issues around LGBT rights in Qatar with former England women's manager Hope Powell and Tash McManus, member of the Three Lions Pride. And we'll be speaking to former Premier League Academy coach Saul Isaacson-Hurst about what it takes to be a youth coach. Now, for someone who, according to her husband, leaves an even worse taste than a controversial last-minute Iranian penalty, it's Hannah Reese.
I genuinely, week on week, I don't know why I work with you. He's such a prick. Every single fucking week.
Oh, I'm good.
I don't even want to ask you how you are because I don't care after that intro.
Have you been enjoying the tournament?
I have, yeah. I've got my poster up on the wall and everything.
I've got a wall chart as well.
Have you?
Been filling out the wall chart. I was going to say, though, it's time for a popular feature we've done before. It's time for things that make you go, oh, yeah, it's the World Cup and I like it.
It's just, please, you didn't do this last week.
The World Cup's so nice.
It literally makes me feel sick. If anyone's listening that hasn't listened to the show before, they'd be like, is he okay? He's not. No. it's normal behaviour.
It's time for the things that make you go, yeah. What did you enjoy this week? Did you enjoy the hunky Iranian goalkeeper who came on against England?
Oh, my God, you know me so well. Yes, I did. You've got like a WhatsApp group with the guys about him, haven't you? Not specifically about him, but he was mentioned.
He got mentioned in my mate WhatsApp group. I thought, it's coming home. I bloody wish he was.
I wish he was. Waiting at the door for him. Naked.
No, that was implied. did you enjoy Roy Keane and Graeme Souness going head to head?
I did. I love that. I love it when Roy Keane gets riled up. So a few of my friends are like, he does it on purpose, Roy Keane. He just does it for like, you know, publicity and stuff. But I don't think he does. And I love how Graham just completely doesn't give a shit. And he will say what he thinks. And he doesn't care who's disagreeing with him. He will just continue his point and he doesn't let it drop. But neither does Roy Keane. So this just makes for a great tournament, doesn't it?
Also, because Roy Keane was like, yeah, tournament shouldn't be here. Look at how they treat migrant workers. Look at how they treat gay people. And it's like, oh, fair enough, Roy. I didn't know you had that in your locker. And then it was like, in my opinion, that's not a penalty. And it's like, no, but I get what you're saying, but it is based on the law. He's like, but it's not. He's like, no, but it is.
And in my opinion.
Yeah, it's like, no, I know. He's like, we're here to give our opinions, aren't we? And it's like, oh, I don't know where he's meant to be from then.
Yeah, sorry, where is he from? Is he not Irish?
It's like, oh, they have to give our opinions, aren't we? It's me, Roy Keane from Dusseldorf. But yeah, that was wonderful television. Anyway, right, let's bring in our first guest. It's time to talk about the tournament so far with comedian and Arsenal fan Dame Baptiste. It's been an absolutely bonkers tournament already on and off the pitch, so it'd be interesting to hear Dane's take on what's been going on in the tournament.
An Arsenal
so far.
Fan as well. We have to point out every guest, we need to know who they support in the Premier League. It makes such a difference. It's like whether you're going to like them or not within the first 5 seconds.
Yeah, well, this is it. Obviously, I was very disappointed to hear in Maddie's intro that she'd written that Dane's an Arsenal fan, but I can let that go because it is an international tournament. So we're all supporting England. Morning, Dane. How are you doing? He's on mute.
Can you hear me now?
There we go. There we go.
So you just see me just shouting into the abyss with alcohol behind me, which is it's great for football, actually, when you think about it. It's actually really good for football. So, yeah.
Do you know what, mate? If you fly over your booze shelf to Qatar, you'll make an absolute fortune.
Yeah.
I'll make an international incident is what I'll make, I think. What I could do is that I'll probably get like an Airbnb and then profile it as like a hotel. And then it could be like a pre-match drinks kind of location.
Like, just get around Dane's pad.
Yeah,
yeah,
like a real oasis. There'll be a literal oasis in the desert. That's the plan.
Dane, what did you make of England's opening game against Iran?
It was good, man. I think I really like I personally am a big fan of Southgate's approach to management of the England squad. I think that he has definitely overcome a lot of the issues before of egos and a lot of external voices speaking about what the formation should be like. I think he definitely goes for a meritocratic setup with the team. I think that the game allowed for him to try a number of different formations and kind of like lineups with the squad. And yeah, I think it was, obviously Iran is not the most formidable enemy, not to say that anyone should be underestimated in a World Cup, but it was a game which allowed us to try a number of different tactics and strategies. And yeah, I was happy with it. I was happy with it. Happy with the link-up play and unselfish play.
So what are you saying, Dane? Are we saying it's coming home? Is that what you're trying to say?
It's very early at the group stage
to say that.
Yeah, way too early to say that. It's way too early to say that. But I would say, though, that with the current England team as it exists, this is probably some of the best option we've had in a very long time to make it happen and come home. I think that the camaraderie and option for like team cohesion is probably the best that it's been for a long time.
What was your favourite moment then during the England match?
Mine was Jude Bellingham. Like, I'm really enthused by the idea of like English players that have gone to other leagues and that are performing very well there and excelling there. They're learning about the game and able to return their competence back to the national side. And I think that was evidenced by Jude Bellingham, his confidence on the ball, and being able to secure a goal and stuff as well. So I'm really happy to see that early confidence very early on. And yeah, well, it seems to be a really good link-up play between themselves and the other forwards.
On your Insta as well, you shared a tweet about the Iranian players not singing their national anthem in protest, but RFA would rather back down from their ideological standpoint rather than risk Harry Kane taking a yellow card. What did you make of that? Do you feel they bottled it?
I mean, I could definitely arguably bottle it, but what I wouldn't do is scrutinise the players that much. I think a lot of the time the media tends to be able to flip between having the singularity of focusing on players and making them the focal point for any ire about like any amorality, rather than speaking to the the larger, more suited players in the proverbial game that make decisions behind closed doors. I don't really think these... obviously, we'd like for footballers, being that they're role models and having a profile, they would to kind of take moral stands in issues, social issues of this nature. But, you know, footballers deal with a number of different pressures. And, you know, there's many ways. And, you know, a lot of footballers have fought for the right to take the knee. And that's been enough of a journey that now they're going to have to take another moral position. So for me, I definitely arguably bottle it, but I wouldn't just focus all of my frustration towards the players, because by the same token, we had retired players like Alex Scott who continue to wear her armband, and I'd definitely focus on you know, that integrity that she showed.
Yeah, absolutely. And what did you make of the Wales draw against the USA? Do you think Wales have got a chance of the last 16? Everyone says no.
No.
But stranger things have happened, as we've seen with some of the other games.
Exactly. Games.
So stranger things have happened. And, you know, I would say that I'd like to definitely be behind the Welsh team. But that being said, you know, a draw against the USA is not necessarily that bad. I think that USA are the people that we underestimate. I think for a very long time, we've not seen America kind of focus their attention on football. But, you know, having their lead striker and one of their talisman players being the son of one of the best players in the world in a form of Timothy Weah means that, you know, it's not an easy team to defeat. And I think, yeah, Wales did very well. And I think what we should really do is worry about when America really starts to focus on football. And in the same way that Qatar has kind of been very lax about offering citizenship to players from around the world to represent Qatar, you know, America needs only look south of the border and they have an entire Central America that they could maybe pull resources from. So with all that considered, I don't think Wales did that badly. I think, again, it really comes down to how people work as a team. And maybe, yeah, give them some time to kind of stretch their legs. I think the USA are a much more formidable opponent than, say, Iran. So it'd be hard to gauge Wales' potential at this stage.
And Dane, who do you think is going to win the whole thing?
Good question. Good question. I would like to say, you know, all things considered, I think seeing the French game, I think they've got a pretty good chance. So I think they could go very far. I think, I say all the time, on paper, the Netherlands could do very well. It's just whether or not it kind of actually happens. But do you know what? I'm going to say it. I think England have got a good chance. Stranger things have happened on the night.
Yes,
but I really feel like this England team...
That's what we want to hear.
Yeah, if they, with all the confidence they have, with all the latent talent they have, I think it just takes focus and cohesion, and they can surprise anybody. We saw with the Euros, on a good day, they can go toe-to-toe with anyone. And I really think that they've got a great chance. But as I said, you know, stranger things have happened.
And how can we see you How can we see you, Dane? Are you busy doing plenty of gigs before Christmas? How can people
I've done a few gigs in and around. I'll be at the Comedy Store just before Christmas from the 22nd to the 23rd. So I'll be at the world famous London Comedy Store. So if you're doing your final Christmas shopping, you risky, risky person, then come and see me and take a load off. You can also search me on daytime. I'm doing Steph's Pat Lunch just in December as well. I also have my podcast as well, so people can check out Podcast Weekly, where I'll be discussing things like football and all things within the world to question as well. But what people can do is also check out, I'll also be doing some shows. I'm at the Streatham Space Project on the 4th of December. So I'm based in South London. And I'm also going to be doing shows on the 18th of December at the Frog and Bucket in Manchester, and also at the Wardrobe in Leeds. So if anyone wants to get all of those confirmed, check out danebaptiste.co.uk.
Bloody hell, you're busy. Comedy.
Listen.
Aren't you?
Money has to make, cost of living crisis. I can't just sit down watching TV. I've got to kick in and do my bit as well. So we're all trying to help out. But no, also, I'm fortunate enough to enjoy my job as well. And you know, you have to, this booze, I've got to build up this cabinet, because after Christmas, this is going to go take a hit. So I'm just trying to make the money. Simply for replenishment purposes.
It doesn't pay for itself.
That's it. It doesn't pay for itself. Unless you take it all to Qatar. And even then, once you get to customs, you might need a little bit more money to grease the palms on your way through. I'm not saying that Qatari government, I'm not saying that people take bribes. Because yeah, that could be my problem. But yeah, I'm all over the place where you get a good comedy. Just to clarify that. But anyway, where you get a good comedy, you'll find Dane Baptiste. So check out my website for more information.
Nice one, Dane. Make sure you check out Dane's website. Check out his Insta. Check out his Twitter. Also check out his pod as well. And if you are in Qatar and you are a bit thirsty, make sure you look out for Dane's off license that he's going to be running out. Right now, of course, the World Cup is a global event. So today we are heading off to a very subdued Buenos Aires to discuss Argentina's shock defeat to Saudi Arabia. The world's tiniest violin playing now. According to friend of the show Simon Gleave and the boffins at Grace Note, Saudi Arabia's win against Argentina supplants USA 1, England 0 in 1950 as statistically the biggest World Cup Borat's joined us. Biggest World Cup upset. Daniel Edwards, sports journalist based in Buenos Aires. Daniel's with us now. So good morning, Daniel. I don't know what time it is in Argentina. Good morning, good afternoon. Buenos tardes.
How you doing, mate? 8:15 in the morning.
Oh, okay. So
pointless. I always hope when you're like you're speaking in the lingo, Joe, and then it's like, all right, how's it going? You all right?
I lost it. And I also don't know how to say good morning. So I'm just going to go back on my standard that I used to say
bonjour, and then I was like, hold on a second.
Argentina hadn't lost for 36 games, Daniel. What was the reaction like in Argentina after the defeat? And is there any blame being apportioned to anyone?
Just what you'd expect, really. Absolute shock. I don't think any of us expected that game to go how it did, especially after, you know, Messi almost going, putting Argentina ahead after 2 minutes and then putting him ahead after 10 minutes with a penalty. And even in the first half, those three disallowed goals, it looked like it was going to be very straightforward. 2-3-4 goal win, start the World Cup on the right foot. And then, yeah, it just went to pieces very quickly after half time. You had those two goals, and it already seemed that Argentina were a bit shaken after not being able to extend their lead, and those two goals just killed them. And here, you know, obviously it was again another very early start. I think kickoff was at 7 o'clock in the morning here, but there was still a lot of movement around in the streets, a lot of expectation, and I think people just didn't know what to do, like didn't know who to blame. You know, people were blaming YouTubers and streamers who had gone out to the World Cup for being bad luck.
I love that. Such a typical football fan saying stuff like that.
blaming the ex-president who was in the stands because he was bad luck, blaming a couple of players, just whoever, you know, you could pin the defeat on. They were fair game. Probably being a little bit more calculated about it. I think Argentina kind of got it wrong tactically. Saudi Arabia just went out and surprised everyone. They did exactly what they needed to do. They were aggressive. They were proactive and probably took Argentina back a little bit with that. And it just wasn't the Argentina we've seen throughout this 36-game run, throughout the Copa America. And they need to get better soon. There's no other way about it.
And how much do you think that's going to impact Argentina moving forward? Because that, you know, confidence wise, they were not expecting that, the biggest shock of the World Cup history. I mean, yeah, I mean, if anybody bet on Saudi beating Argentina, you'd be quids in, wouldn't you? Oh. But how do you think that's going to impact Argentina moving forward?
I mean, that's going to be the big question now. This team has stood out these last 3 years for having such a good spirit, being really close together. The players gel really well and they're pretty much best friends. Like I've said a couple of times, the atmosphere around the camp has always looked more like a lads' holiday. You know, these young guys just really getting on well together.
That might be the problem then, if it is a lads' holiday.
Like Joe's reminiscing.
Possibly that went a bit far that way, but we'll see. But obviously, you know, having that kind of ethos, that kind of spirit is very easy when you're 36 games unbeaten. Mm. Now, we're going to see if they can maintain it and not fall apart after a very, very tough defeat. And that's going to be the big question on Saturday against Mexico. Can they get it together? Can they just put it out of their minds and, you know, get at least 4 points out of these last two games to qualify?
Do you think we'll see any changes personnel-wise, tactically, maybe, against Mexico?
I don't think tactically we're going to see any massive changes because this is a system which has worked well throughout Lionel Scaloni, the coach's reign. Player-wise, I do think we're going to see changes because I suspect that one of the factors in Tuesday's defeat was that there were a couple of players there who were struggling with fitness and got the nod when they were possibly not quite ready to play. And luckily for Argentina, they do have different options. For instance, Lisandro Martinez, of course, who was on the bench and came on for Cristiano Romero, who was one of the guys who, throughout the build-up, there was a lot of doubt over whether he was going to make it, and once he was on the pitch, he looked very, very pedestrian, very slow, and probably wasn't in the best condition of play. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Lisandro Martinez come in at all, and probably someone else to strengthen the midfield, because you saw Saudi Arabia really pressing there and leaving Argentina's midfield very, very stranded without any real outlet to get them moving forward, apart from you know, the old long balls over the top, which just kept getting called offside. So I wouldn't be surprised to see someone like Alexis McAllister or Enzo Fernandez come in to give them a bit more, a few more options in that position.
And is there a bit of a concern with the Argentinian squad being slightly more mature? Because I know that three players over the age of 34 started. Is that a concern or not, especially after the performance? Is that a worry for the rest of the World Cup?
I don't think so, no. I mean, it's definitely a younger squad than we had back in 2018. And one of those old guys is Messi. So that always helps.
Which is crazy to even think that that's a thing, that he's an old guy. He's going to be on forever, though, isn't he?
Yeah, I can't quite get my head around it. I mean, he's a year younger than me, so as he's getting older every year, it's kind of mucking my own sense of mortality. So, no, I think in general it's a squad that's young and hungry. Possibly what we saw on Tuesday as well was, even going the other way, there were a lot of players in this team who had never played at a World Cup before. You know, key players like Martinez in goal, Romero, Paredes, De Paul, Lautaro Martinez, kind of this core of the team, which has been so important. And I don't know if perhaps, you know, in their first World Cup game, the sense of occasion perhaps got to them. But I think it's a good blend overall of youth and experience. And I think this defeat will kind of push them on. We'll give them a bit of a kick in the right direction, and hopefully on Saturday we're gonna see a better performance.
Thank you very much, Daniel. Daniel Edwards there, sports journalist based in Buenos Aires.
Thank you.
Recap on that shock defeat, Saudi Arabia 2, Argentina 1. The game that really brought the World Cup to life for me, as far as I'm concerned. Now, it's some of the big conversation. So this is about having an in-depth and uncensored chat around the controversies that face this year's World Cup. And today we're going to focus on Qatar's anti-LGBT laws and the effect it's had on international fans and players and the whole controversy going on around that. So to give you a little bit of context, Qatar have some of the strictest laws around homosexuality in the world. They adopt an interpretation of Sharia law. Being caught can lead to a 1 to 3 year prison sentence. However, if caught during same-sex activity, that can have a much heavier sentence. Qatari police, we understand, have been instructed not to arrest any same-sex fans who are showing affection during the tournament. However, there have obviously been issues with fans, not least Helen McAllister, the former Wales captain, having her rainbow bucket hat confiscated. There's been journalists who've been going into the grounds, having rainbow clothes confiscated, that kind of thing. And we've also obviously seen this One Love armband, which 7 teams were going to wear, including England. That's been thrown aside because... essentially, FIFA said that there would be sanctions, so the captains would get yellow cards. And the football associations, as Dane said, not necessarily the players, but the football associations of those countries deemed it, well, but thought it was worse to get a yellow card than to stand up for what they believed in. It's obviously been one of the big issues surrounding this World Cup. So let's bring in Hope Powell, CBE, former footballer, former coach of Brighton Hove Albion, the England women's team as well, and Tash McManus, member of the Three Lions Pride. Hello, both. Thank you very much for joining us. And Hope, if we start with you, obviously this World Cup, you were at England when the World Cup was awarded in 2010. And did you kind of... Were there any feelings for you at the time that this could be the start of something? And I suppose more, do you feel like the FA and the other football associations bottled it when it came to the One Love armband the other day?
Firstly, I think when it was awarded to Qatar, I don't think that there was enough conversation around it. Not that I can remember anyway. So that was kind of somewhat left. I'm sure there were discussions that went on, but not as it stands today. I think with the armband, I think they should have worn the armband. I think they should have taken the yellow card sanction. I think it would have sent out a real positive statement. And I just think it's a shame that they didn't do that.
Yeah, and what did you think of Alex Scott choosing to wear the armband anyway? Do you feel like that sent a positive message?
Yeah, I thought it was really brave. I think it sent out a real statement that it is about inclusivity and a very, very powerful message. Actually, I was just on the line with Alex Scott. She's fighting the fight, as she's saying, difficult circumstances, but she was brave enough to do it.
What were her thoughts? Because obviously there was a lot of chat yesterday that obviously all the other football associations said they weren't going to, said, okay, we're backing down, but we're not happy with what FIFA have said. The Danes said we're going to do it anyway. Christian Eriksen didn't walk out yesterday with that armband on. Does she feel isolated, like she's alone in this fight?
To be honest, I wouldn't know that, Joe. I didn't have that much of a conversation with her. It was very quick this morning. But you can imagine the circumstances and the media attention around it has been quite vast. I just think it was a really brave thing to do. I think to show that, you know, her feelings about inclusivity and, it certainly shone a light on it and a lot of media attention around it.
And it's crazy to think that this tournament, this World Cup is at the centre of everybody's watching this at the moment. Mm-hmm. And I mean, when I take my kids to school, I've got 2 little boys and they'll say, somebody's got 2 mummies, somebody's got 2 daddies, somebody's got a mummy and a daddy. And it's like, all right, cool. It makes no difference whatsoever. But yet we're in this situation now where we're in an environment where it's really awkward because this is just like completely unacceptable. And it just makes me feel very uncomfortable. And I can't imagine the parents at school that are watching the tournament with their children. It must be like such resentment to know that the way that they behave and sort of their regime and their perception of relationships and stuff that can't be allowed. Yet we're trying to watch this tournament and enjoy it. But I just feel that I can't get past that point. It's just uncomfortable. And I just can't see how we're going to get past that for the rest of the competition.
Yeah, I imagine a lot of people feel that way when they're watching. We live in a very different world, and I think we are very privileged and fortunate enough to be able to walk around freely, to express our feelings of love to whoever we want to love. You know, the culture's very different. You know, the initial argument, should they even have been awarded the World Cup? I think the only... Sounds really sort of a bit bizarre, but I think at least it shines a light on it, and it's creating conversations, you know, looking at human rights, looking at diversity and inclusion, and all those things are being spoken about, which perhaps before it would never have happened. We live in a very different world, and I think we are very fortunate enough.
Yeah.
As I said, to be able to live in the way we want to live. And it's just opened up a whole new conversation that hopefully might help change minds and attitudes.
And Tash, let me ask you. So when it comes to that armband, and FIFA said, okay, well, you can wear it, but we'll give your captains a yellow card. On the one hand, I feel, well, take the yellow card, make a point, get the world's attention on this. And I was listening to something from Adam Crafton on The Athletic, and he said, imagine if Harry Kane had taken a yellow card for that. What a moment that is in history. What a huge moment of protest. But the FA didn't want to do it. Do you feel that the FA, Tash, and FIFA are ignoring their responsibilities to make football as inclusive as possible?
Oh, yeah, for sure, 100%. When... I was going to watch only England play, but since the notification came out about them banning the one love armband, I'm not watching any of it, because there's no point entertaining it. From what I've heard about people I know that are out there, it doesn't feel like a tournament out there at all, because you don't have the buzz, you don't have the enjoyment, because everything's just so complicated out there, and it's just not inclusive for everyone. It's not just LGBT, it's about religions, it's about race, it's about gender. Like, me being female, I probably would have to deal with prosecution out there because of the fact of I'm female, regardless of my sexuality. It's just insane.
Yeah, and the Three Lions Pride have chosen not to attend the tournament in person. I'm going to say, can you tell us a bit more about that decision? But I think it's pretty obvious, really.
Yeah, basically a statement came out that they don't, FIFA and the FA couldn't provide 100% security that we would be safe if we went out there, because there wasn't that 100%. Like, it wasn't even like 50%. Like, we had absolutely no confirmation that we would be safe if we travelled. So we just decided, no, there's no point for that. We can make our stand from home, where we are, and basically move on to like the next World Cup. We had it in Russia. We made a stand there 4 years ago. We'll do the same again at the next one in America, when America, Mexico and Canada host it.
And Tash, the Qatari government did say that LGBT fans who show affection at the tournament won't be persecuted. However, we've had tons of reports, not least Laura McAllister, who was the Wales captain. She was going into a game and had her rainbow bucket hat confiscated. Lots of journalists who've gone in wearing rainbow T-shirts and tops and that kind of thing have been told to take them off. So people have said they won't be persecuted, but they're being made to take off symbols with rainbows on and stuff, be made to remove those. That doesn't sound like a lack of persecution to me. Did you kind of feel any comfort from that reassurance from the Qatari government, or did it all just feel a bit hollow? And kind of where are you on it now?
Well, it was hollow when they first stated it. Talking about like alcohol, for example, the fact that they said that we couldn't, well, as soon as that statement came out later last week, we were just waiting for something to come out regarding the rainbows, for example. People are hearing that the reports are being made to FIFA and the FA, the fact that rainbow related attire is being removed. It doesn't even have, it's just a rainbow. Like, we've been using the rainbow for like the NHS as well, so it could mean anything. But yet they're taking it off of people. Apparently they're going to try and stop it, but it's already happened, so they obviously have a point to prove that they're going to rescind any promises they made prior to the tournament.
Do you think the decision to hold the tournament in an anti-gay country, Hope, do you think that if there's any male gay footballers that they're out there, that there's no way that they're going to feel comfortable to kind of come out and sort of express themselves? I'm sure they're living in a bit of fear.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think you can be in that country and be truly who you want to be. And that must be really, really difficult. And you probably live in fear, and you know, there are people who are gay, bisexual, whatever, and they probably live in fear. The fact that if they show affection, that something detrimental will happen. And it isn't just, I think their culture is just showing whether you're gay, straight, bisexual, they don't want people to show signs of affection publicly. It's difficult because while you want to respect somebody else's culture and the way they choose to live, when it's very different to your own and it doesn't feel right, and we're watching from afar, it's a very difficult thing to accept when you are, you don't live in that world and you're not brought up in those religions. And it must be very difficult for those people, really difficult.
Yeah.
And Hope, if you were with Gareth Southgate right now, or I suppose even kind of drawing on your own experience of taking the Lionesses to multiple tournaments, and it's the same situation, it's in Qatar, the regime is what it is, would you have wanted to boycott the tournament?
That's a difficult one, Joe, because I think players work extremely hard. Going to a World Cup could be the pinnacle of their career. That would be an individual choice. If I was the manager, would I boycott the tournament? Probably not, in all honesty. I think, however, I would definitely have encouraged, the team, the captain, the other associations to make a statement by wearing an armband. I think it really shines a light on, the wrong, what we see as wrong that's going on in that country, and hopefully attitudes will change. But I don't think I would have boycotted as a player or a manager. I would have wanted to make a statement while I was there and try and help those people that are less fortunate than ourselves in this country.
And what's your thoughts then about David Beckham and him kind of not making a statement and him continuing his work with the Qatari government?
Yeah, I don't think that's really for me to. I have no opinion one way or the other. I think sometimes, you look at it and you go, look, for a lot of people, money influences, money talks. I think you only have to look in our own country. We have, investment from the Middle East in this country. The Shard, the football clubs, Newcastle. It's happening all around us. So, we've got to take a little bit of a look at ourselves. We've got to look at the bigger picture, perhaps. People in positions of influence need to look at themselves. I'm not his judge and jury. He can only do that for himself. I just think, the fact that conversations are happening and, there's some real strong statements, some people coming out and expressing their concerns may well be a force for good that will help change things in the future.
Yeah, and the longer that England stay in the World Cup, the better for us. It gives us more opportunities to, share opinions and voices and that sort of thing. Did you enjoy watching England this week?
Do you know what? I just literally got back from Jamaica, so I haven't really... I saw some of the goals. I haven't really... in the time of year, it's a little bit odd for me that we're playing a World Cup at the end of the year. I'm just a little bit... I'm just trying to get myself back into it. I've just came in the country yesterday, and it's been a little bit of this is going on now. It seems a little bit odd to have a World Cup in winter.
Yeah, it is a bit bizarre. Tash, can I ask you the same question? Not asking you to sort of slag him off, but just your kind of viewpoints on the David Beckham scenario. How do you feel about him kind of not making a stance as yet?
It's kind of disheartening when you've had someone supporting your community for a long time to then suddenly, I don't know, like join in with someone who, like, you know, in with a country and a government that doesn't.
Yeah.
I appreciate, okay, he's got to make his stance. Again, like Hope said, money is a big influence on a lot of things. But I feel like he has that platform, as like what Alex Scott did.
Yeah.
They need to be the ones that make the stand and be heard, because I don't feel like the authorities would make a move on people of that stature, because they're protected more than the general public, like myself. So I feel like they need to take that opportunity to be our voice on that stage, because we can't be there.
I find it, I don't know about you, Tash, I find it just a bit disappointing. So I kind of think, like, when he looks back on his life, does he want to think, oh, I'm glad I took that 10 million quid to basically help with a sport washing campaign? Or does he want to turn around and go, no, actually, as arguably the most famous person on the planet, I turned around and went, I don't want to do this, and here's why. And it's kind of when he's kind of got enough money and whatever, and I'm sure he's a very nice guy, but it's kind of like, I feel there was a lot of opportunity for a lot of people to say stuff. And actually, funny, Hanny and I were talking about Roy Keane earlier, and kind of say what you like about Roy Keane, but Roy Keane was on air yesterday and was the first pundit I've heard go, to be honest with you, look at the way they treat migrant workers, look at the way they treat gay people, there's no way this World Cup should be here. And he just said it bang on air on a commercial station, and it's like, fair play, you've used that platform,
because everybody's going, yeah, somebody's finally saying it.
Yeah, and obviously, I mean, because Roy Keane's not one to kind of mince words, but like, I thought, yeah, that's, you do have that platform, and I just do find it a little bit disappointing, I guess. Tash, can I just quickly ask you as well, how would you have liked to see England and the FA make a stand? And with Hope, I don't think the players should kind of have to boycott. It's not down to them, it's down to the football associations, it's down to there's bigger things here, and they're obviously the visible ones. Okay, the One Love armband, they didn't do it. Also, I understand that One Love armband, it wasn't, you weren't able to buy an England shirt with that on and stuff, there wasn't merch with that on, it was a pretty tepid gesture anyway. But they flew in a rainbow plane. Okay, fine, there's a lot of headlines for that. What would you like to see England and the FA have done or do now?
I feel like incorporating it into their shirt in future, potentially. Like, I know Belgium have had their away shirt banned from being worn with the love embroidered in the back of their shirt. But it's like, okay, FIFA have said no, but what's stopping them from doing that? Yeah. Okay, take the sanction, take a fine. But I feel like all these European associations that have basically bottled it when it comes to making a stance when they said they would, it means for us as a community that we lose hope and trust in those associations, that they will fight the fight for us, because as far as we can see, it's not happening. Even if they warm up in a rainbow t-shirt, like, they're not wearing it in the match, they're just warming up in it. You see people warm up in t-shirts to gesture towards certain events or certain activities that have happened in, like, the Premier League, for example. So,
and
why
then at least it's on the TV, yeah. We see it. Yeah. Like, those pictures go around the world.
It's there, even if it's just for the warm-up, it's there. It's making a stance. It's little gestures like that, which will go a long way. It will get the news broadcast. It will make a statement. It doesn't necessarily have to be hugely grandeur, but rainbow washing is the thing that we hate the most. Mm. And it sometimes feels like it can be that way often.
And Hope, let me just ask you just finally before we wrap up, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but we do all massively
but you are going to
kill he's going to
I'm going to I think we massively respect your opinion and want to know what you think. What would your message to Gareth Southgate, to England, to the FA, what would your message be to them right now?
Yeah, I mean, I would have worn the armband. I would have shown some support of what everybody's talking about. I think it's really easy to talk about sanctions. I've just got to go back to that, because you don't know how big the sanction could be. And that is the fear. If the sanction is that, you know, the next World Cup, you won't be able to participate, that is not what I don't think the country would want, not to go to the next World Cup. So I've been part of World Cups for a lot of years, and you have to go through so many rigmaroles about kit, the size of the branding. It's quite meticulous and quite tedious, actually. And the sanctions could be far greater than just, you know, a one-match ban or whatever. It could be a tournament ban. So you have to be really careful when you talk about sanctions, because you don't know what they could be. I think as it stands today, I think in this tournament, I would definitely have worn the One Love armband. I would encourage the players to speak openly about how they feel about it, and while they've got that platform. But you have to be mindful that, you know, it could be quite a big risk for the FA and the country as a whole when it comes to you know, wanting to play in a major tournament. So we just need to be mindful of that. It's not as easy as perhaps we all think. You know, let's, you know, do this, let's do that, because you don't know what the sanctions could be.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much. Hope Power Attachment Manners, thank you so much. Honestly, interesting conversation, and just such a pleasure to have you both on. We really, honestly, are hugely grateful and hugely honoured to have had you both on. If you have any thoughts, do get in touch with us on Instagram, or you can get in touch with us on Twitter, anything like that. These controversies at this World Cup are not going to go away now. So it's just going to build and build. We do want to hear from you guys. We do want to hear your thoughts. And we are going to be having these big conversations every single episode. And I think it's really interesting what Hope said, and what Tash kind of said as well, that Hannah, we can use this opportunity to shine a light on these issues. And I agree. I think I don't think boycotting the World Cup is the right thing, but I think use it to start the conversation, I think, is potentially is the right thing to do. Right now, in a crushing gear change, it's time for some of the World Cup's funniest moments. Each episode, we'll be reacting to some of the funniest moments from the tournament so far. And today's comes from a TalkSport interview, which took place on Sunday, the day of the opening ceremony. It features two Everton fans who talk about their hunt for beers in Qatar after it was announced that alcohol was going to be banned.
It would just mean having a good time, having a mooch, you know, getting our bearings right, and just the setup spot on, you know. Yeah, we've been enjoying ourselves, haven't we, John?
Yeah, last night we met one of the Sheikh's sons, and he took us back to the palace, and he showed us the lions and everything. They've made us so welcome. And look around you, it doesn't get any better than this.
Basically, we were obviously on a bit of a hunt for some beers.
Obviously.
And he was like, yeah, we saw beer, so we jumped into the back of his Toyota Land Cruiser. Ended up at a big palace, and we were in the back and showed her his monkeys, his exotic birds. It was nuts.
Oh my god, that's literally brilliant. So good.
No matter where you go on earth, you will get a couple of scousers getting themselves into mad scrapes. What was so good about this as well is a lot of people thought, oh, they're talking rubbish. One of the lads released a video later on showing him at the palace playing with a lion cub.
But it is a bit, that video's a bit awkward though, isn't it? Because I don't know if the lion cub is actually going to eat his face, and then I reckon the other guys there would just find it hilarious and keep it online.
But I think he did find some beers, because he's like, oh man, look at this. This is boss. Oh, that'll get off me, mate. Literally. And there's all these Qatari guys standing around filming him and laughing while he plays. He's got his Everton shirt on and he's playing with a lion. Wonderful. Just also, there's lots of things I like about that clip. The fact that he specified that it's a Toyota Land Cruiser.
Yeah.
That he got in. He's like, on the back of his Toyota Land Cruiser.
Obviously, I'm looking for some beers. Do you know what I mean? Obviously. course he is.
Yeah, it's like, this is a country where you can't drink, and FIFA have said there will be no booze. Like, so we're on the hunt for some beers, you know what I mean? Maybe we meet up with the Sheikh sons.
But once, because I've worked in Qatar a few times, probably like 6 or 7 times, and I've worked in Saudi as well. And I was commentating on this swimming event, and I had an interpreter with me, and she was like, "Oh, do you want to come to my house for tea?" And I was like, "Oh, that would be so lovely." Next minute, somebody turned up in this truck outside, and she took me to this restaurant, and it was just me and her there, and they got enough food for like 20 people. So I was like, "Oh, is your family coming?" She's like, "No, this is just for me and you." And then she went out and bought the ingredients for me to make this food to bring home with me. But I was like, she got me like a lamb's leg and like loads of different meat and stuff. And I was like, "How do I, I'm going to have to put this in the bin in my hotel."
Well, you're a vegetarian for a kid. Oh, you're vegan.
Yeah. I'm vegan. Yeah. But yeah, she got me all these ingredients and like herbs and spices. And I was really nervous to come back home because I was like, what if I get stopped and it's not really herbs and spices that you can eat? I was very nervous.
If you get stopped at customs and you go, "I made friends with a translator and she gave me lots of small see-through bags of powder." And I said, "Yeah, sure, I'll bring it home."
And she was really kind.
You've just got to meet her mate Gary at the North Terminal on the way out. He'll give you a little paper envelope. You give him that. But also, like, going through customs with a leg of lamb in your suitcase.
Get really bad food poisoning from that.
But I mean, I love everything about that. I love, like, I do like this idea of kind of the building bridges thing, because I think the problem we have at the moment is that, well, FIFA are involved. So it's just a big, huge mess. And they just keep saying ridiculous things. Gianni Infantino said that he sympathizes with what it's like to be oppressed because he grew up with red hair. Whatever. I don't think that's the same.
Like, yeah. I'm not a little bit different.
Yeah. I'm sure people did take the mickey out of you about that. That's absolutely fine. Right. Yeah. But I don't think you can equate that with like racism, inequality, human rights abuses, homophobia. But that's just FIFA. And I think what we're kind of missing in the middle of all this is like what you get at a World Cup, which is so great, which is random people from all over the world making friends with locals. And to be fair, what I've seen, the complaints that I've seen and stuff being about FIFA officials, when you're going in, they're taking the bucket hats off, or they're taking the rainbow stuff off, all that kind of thing. Not the locals. They all seem to be having an absolutely smashing time. Yeah. And on our next show, we're going to speak into an England fan who's out there. And he's a guy I know quite well. We used to work together on the radio. And I messaged him. I was like, "What's it like?" He said, "It's so good, mate. We're having such a laugh." And I think the problem is the organisers and FIFA and the ones that are giving this whole affair such a bad name. And kind of one way or another, I'd be interested to hear a little bit more from the locals, I think. Also, one thing I would quite like to say, not a funny moment, but a touching moment, I mentioned it in the intro, is that lots of people missed this because it was after the first game, it was after Ecuador-Qatar. A Qatari guy filmed himself in the stands and filmed himself. He was like, "I don't know what's going on, but there's loads of Japan fans here who are cleaning up the stadium." And then he filmed loads of them. And he went up and was like, What are you doing?" And they were like, "Oh, well, just Japanese people don't like to leave rubbish behind. So we thought we'd just come to the games and clean up after people." And he was like, "You're not doing it for the cameras?" I was like, "Oh, no, we don't mind." Just tidying up the stadium. And he just got photos of him with loads of Japanese people. And he's like helping them put all the rubbish in the bags. But I found out, I didn't realize this, at the 2018 World Cup, when Japan got knocked out, because they were such lovely, polite people, they tidied up their dressing room and left a note saying, "Thanks for having us," which they wrote in Russian, just so their hosts could read it. It's so, like, given how generally obnoxious most football fans are, I'm so excited that I put my headphone out. Given how obnoxious most football fans are, well, not most football fans, but some football fans, and how obnoxious lots of football players can be, I just think that's such a lovely, sweet thing to do.
Yeah, you don't really get that kind of thing at Old Trafford on a Sunday afternoon.
Never seen that at the Lane.
Yeah.
Not once. Get around yours, Hannah, to sort out that leak in the roof.
Well, I know. I'm actually worried. So we're obviously filming this now, and we've had a lot of rain, and I've got two leaks in my living room. So I've got these two huge buckets, and it sounds like drips coming out, but I don't want it to sound as if I'm like a bit incontinent. I got a bit nervous before we did this. I was like, "Joe, does it sound like I'm weighing?" And you were like, "No, I don't think so." exciting.
No, it's nice because Hannah was like, oh, I'm moving. It's my dream home. I'm really looking forward to like making it like our big family home. I was like, yes, sounds great. Turned up, the drains were blocked.
Full of shit.
I was like, oh, I've never seen that on location, location, location.
Forever home.
Right, okay, it's time for Tell Me Something I Didn't Know. So this is the segment where we explore some of the most important aspects of football that rarely get discussed. We talked to someone in the area and they demystify. I don't know why I've gone all Darren Brown, sorry.
Yeah, why do
they demystify it for us? And this week we're focusing on youth coaches. What are they?
Did you just rub your nipples?
No, I was actually doing like a little like getting ready.
All right,
to be like,
sorry.
Boom, boom. Sorry, okay. That would have been inappropriate. Focusing on youth coaches, what are they? Why do they exist? And how do they help footballers? Now with us is Saul Isaacson-Hurst, founder of My Personal Football Coach and former Premier League Academy coach at Arsenal. Boo! Chelsea, boo! Boo. And Spurs. Yeah! I don't know if Saul did hear that. Saul, I was looking at your career history and I mean, deeply upset that you've been at Arsenal and Chelsea, but delighted that you're at Spurs as well. Thank you for joining us. How's it going?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
So what are the main differences between coaching kids and young adults for you?
Not a great deal. And really, if you think about the actual practices you're doing, they're pretty similar. The difference is going to be in the outcomes. And obviously with, you know, older players, higher level players, you get a lot more high intensity and that sort of thing. And you've got to challenge them more. But I mean, reality is, in terms of the coaching methodology, it's pretty similar.
Interesting, because this is a discussion I had with some school mums the other day, actually, at the school gates. Because my eldest boy, he's six, and there's some kids in his year that have been signed to some football academies, which when I heard that, I was like, at 6 years old, like 5 and 6 years old, to me, I think that is insane because the commitment of these kids to be training, and one of the families has actually relocated to be nearer to the football club. And then I know a couple of kids aged 7 and 8 in academies, and it's like their family has had to fully commit to taking them to training most days and matches and stuff. Now, my perspective of this, I personally think that is way too young for kids to be going through the academies and stuff. But then I'm happy for you to completely correct me for being wrong, because I'm like, that is so young to commit to one sport.
I mean you're not allowed to actually sign for an academy until you're an under 9, so you're 8 years old. So
yeah,
what happens is generally a lot of these young players will go into different academies and they might go to two or three sort of thing. But I mean, yeah, listen, it's a really tough industry, but I mean, you know, there's a couple ways to look at it. I mean, you know, luckily I've worked in the industry for 20 years. I worked in academy football for over 10 years and you can get some really great experiences in there in terms of, you know, life experiences and developing, you know, better human beings, not just players. But I mean, it is a tough industry and it is a very demanding and it takes a lot of dedication, not only from the children, but also from the parents, you know, and they're, you know, running around three times a week, taking to trainers. So it is tough, but I mean, you know, that's football really, you know, it's the number one sport in the world. Everybody wants to be a footballer and it's just a great opportunity to get into one of these high performance centres. You've got to be, you know, obviously very good, and it is an amazing opportunity. So, you know, it does take the bit of rough with the smooth.
And when kids get into these academies, sorry, Joe, when kids get into these academies, the opportunities from that point, the facilities, like you say, are probably out of this world in comparison to what we can comprehend.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You're talking about world-class facilities, world-class coaching, you know, all those sorts of things that come with that, you know, opportunities to travel abroad and travel around. It's a lot of fun. You know, it's very intense, very challenging. But I mean, you look at most sports, you know, in the world, you know, if you're a high young sports person who's gifted and talented, whether it's in tennis or, you know, even in ballet, gymnastics, or in, you know, anything, you know, there's a violin, you're going to put the extra work into become even better. You know, you are an outlier. So it's not just football, we have that. But yeah, I mean, it's a great opportunity if you do get, you know, lucky enough to get asked to go into one of these places.
But that's like you, Hannah, isn't it? Because I know you were a swimmer and you kind of, because obviously of your webbed feet and hands, but you gave up.
You're mocking me, but I actually have got webbed feet.
Exactly, it helped. I know you talked to me about how you had to like get up at silly o'clock in the morning and train 7 days a week and stuff, and that commitment that's necessary is crazy.
Yeah, for like 4 hours a day, every morning, every night, go to school. I just stink of chlorine constantly. You know, nobody would let me kiss them in Kiss Chase because I used to smell of like a bleached toilet.
Or this was when you had no teeth and a bowl haircut.
Yeah.
And my dad used to swimming, yeah. Well, you smell, like, smell like a bleached toilet, yeah.
Yeah. But, so, like, I live in southwest London, so kind of on the train into Waterloo, you see a lot of the lads on that train from Cobham in the Chelsea tracksuits and stuff.
Yeah.
Obviously, they've got an amazing facility down there. But I've talked to footballers and stuff, and I know that it's a tiny, tiny, tiny percentage of these guys who make it to the Premier League. A few will go pro, some won't make it pro at all. A very small percentage make it to the Premier League, and a very even smaller percentage than that make it top level. You're kind of, well, Chelsea, Fekir Tomori, Mason Mount, that kind of, the people who make it to the first team Champions League football, that sort of thing. And I mean, I kind of wonder, are you, is part of your role managing expectations of these lads, and how do you kind of deal with that? Because it is a very brutal thing that they have to go through, because they must have their dream stripped away from them at one point.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, I mean, that's the reality. Like I say, if anything, yeah, you want to be, you know, if you want to be an actor or something like that, you know, getting up to the, you know, win an Oscar is very difficult. But I mean, yeah, I mean, as soon as a kid comes into an academy, the first conversation they're going to have is going to be about tapering expectations, especially with the parents, and saying, you know, statistically, you know. But I mean, if you're lucky enough to go to a Chelsea, statistically, you know, you've got more chance of making it than any other club, because it's, you know, one of the most successful academies. So
yeah,
you know, it is about that and doing that. But I mean, it doesn't mean, you know, what you're going to say to someone, you know, if a young child's got a dream, you're going to say, well, no, there's no point doing it, no one ever makes it. I mean, what's, you know, what sort of statement you're saying that to a child, what sort of, you know, message is that? So you've got to do that while saying that, look, anything is possible, potentially someone's got to do it, and you know, maybe it might be good, but if it isn't, this is the really key thing about academy life and academy football, is that you're giving these young people good experiences, life, you know, transferable experiences using other parts in life, and great experiences, and you know, and creating better human beings. And most academies will say that now, you know, they're really important about education, is really important, and manners and character and personality, and developing the psychological aspects as well. So whatever they do end up being, whether they do lucky enough to be a Premier League footballer or lower down or do or something else in life, a coach, whatever, they're going to have those things which they've gained from that environment.
Yeah, and can you tell us a little bit about my personal football coach?
Yeah, so basically, I mean, yeah, I'm a sort of an individual skill specialist. I work individually with a lot of pros, Premier League players, stuff like that. That's always been my specialism in academy football, and now working with that. And then my personal football coach is like an online, it's an app for players and parents to download and work, do technical work by themselves. And like academies, for example, like Arsenal and Wolverhampton Wanderers and Middlesbrough use it as like a homework program. So something you can basically access wherever you are in the world, access a world-class trainer you can do yourself. It's designed that's just, you know, the player and the ball, very easy to set up, but very good, high quality technical training they can do anywhere, sort of thing, that is very easy to accessible and sort of idiot proof, if you like.
Could I use it? Because I am I'm 35 now, and 11 aside is now a bit beyond me. I'm too old and I'm too achy. So I actually recently filled out the application to join a veterans team, because it's 35 up to 50, and I was like, sick, I'll suddenly be like the young buck. I'll be like Leo Messi breaking into the Barcelona team. But is it something that, like, maybe myself and my friends could use if there's certain things we want to work on?
Yeah, 100%. And that's what I said earlier about, you know, there's no real difference in terms of the drills, if you want to call them, or the practices you're doing if you're a child or you're an adult. You know, and the same thing as I've been an individual coach for 20 years, and I'm lucky to work with, you know, some of the best players in the world. But during my 20 years, I've worked with a lot of people who are, you know, new to the game at 30, 40, 50, who are just, you know, just wanting to engage with it and start almost as beginners. And like I say, it's really, you know, technique's the base where all football comes from. So whatever level you're at, whatever age you're at, if you want to get a little bit better, it's really key. So yeah, nice question. My personal football coach is ideal for any age or any ability, really.
I
feel like I want to get my son in an academy now. My mind's
let's do it. Let's all just get, well, it's
my
pretty
mind.
Too late for us, Anna, but you can join my veterans team. I have to ask, just like as a football nerd, who's the most talented player you've worked with, who you've turned up to do individual stuff with, and you thought, whoa?
It's difficult. I mean, I'm lucky with some top players, and some players I'm not even allowed to talk about because they don't like to do say the training. But I mean, look, I work with current players like Rico Henry. He's at Brentford. He's a Premier League player. Noni Madueke, who's England under 21. He's at PSV. You know, Max Aarons, I've worked with many years, who's at Norwich. I mean, I work with, and then like Flo Balogun, Arsenal striker, and Tyrese John-Jordan. I'm lucky. There's so many of those guys. And then, like, you know, some of the younger ones, Jamal Musiala, who's now at Bayern Munich.
He's outrageous. I can't wait to see him.
Yeah, so when I was at Chelsea, he's, you know, so, and you know, when you work at, you know, Chelsea and Arsenal and Tottenham, you work with top players every single day, so you see, you know, so much talent out there, really. So like Oliver Skipp, for example, you probably know if you're a Tottenham fan. I worked with him many, many times because he's an 8, 9, 10, 11-year-old when I was at Spurs, so yeah.
Wow. Yeah, also, I would just say to people listening, Jamal Musiala is this guy who's at Bayern at the moment and lighting up the Bundesliga. And I think he is Germany's great hope this World Cup. So do keep an eye on him. Just finally, Saul, what's the best bit about your job?
Going to work every day and playing football, basically. I mean, you know, they say if you have a job you love, you'd never work a day in your life. So I'm still waiting to work a day for the last, 20 years. So it's fun. Yeah, it's great. And, go traveling and working and being in football is a real privilege.
Oh, amazing. Thank you so much.
Dream job.
Really interesting stuff. Do check out my personal football coach as well. Thank you very much, Saul Isaacson.
Thank you.
Who's founder of that app, that technology. Absolutely amazing stuff. Hannah, do you think that when you sort of know that you've got to do a podcast with me, do you kind of sit there and think it doesn't feel like work?
Hang on.
It's an honour. If anything, it's a privilege.
I think if you caught my facial expressions when you're saying things that make you go like that, that facial expression I pull at that point is job satisfaction for me, Joe. That's basically what I look like.
Right, well, that's all we've got time for today.
We've really adulted Joe today, haven't we?
Adulted. Right, we're going to be back with our next episode very soon. Follow us on social media, Foobar Radio as well. You can follow myself and Hannah. If you have any questions for us, please do let us know. We're going to be talking to tons of different people next time. More big conversation, more tell me something I didn't know. And we are going to have an England fan who's in Qatar on with us. You had a nice time, Hannah?
I have had a nice time with you, Joe.
It's been ever so nice. Right, we'll see you next time.
Bye.